wrote an article in a law enforcement journal called The Broken Window Theory. Some of you may have heard of that. After they wrote it, there was years spent, probably government money. There's probably studies and committees and everything else that came together to analyze the results. And in the 90s, somebody actually wrote a book about it, Broken Window Theory. The idea of the broken window theory, if you can picture a building, and all of us see them. Hopefully it's not in your neighborhood, but all of us see them. You go past that building that is still being used. It's not abandoned, but it sure looks like it. Windows are broken out. There's graffiti on the sides, damage done. And it stays like that because nobody bothers to clean it up. It stays that way because those people have kind of given up. In their minds, they're not going to bother fixing it. They're not going to bother fixing the windows, cleaning off the graffiti, things like that, because in their minds, it's just going to happen again. The same thugs will come up and damage it again. But you can have another building in the same neighborhood that gets the exact same damage all the time. But those owners or renters or whoever, they actually fix it every time. The difference between the two is one is being proactive about what's going on around them and one is being reactive. Those people that are fixing up that building, they're sending a message. And those people that aren't fixing up their building, they're sending a message. The idea of proactive or reactive, I think, can be used in our lives. But I'll get back to that. Mayor Giuliani, not really a good man to use as a character reference, but he had some good ideas. Whenever he was mayor of New York City, he did a lot of changes, a lot of positive things. For those of you that were in New York City in the 80s and then went back maybe in the late 90s, there was a difference. You go to New York City in the 80s or earlier, and you were afraid. You were afraid to go certain places. You were afraid you were going to be mugged or robbed. You were afraid your car was going to be stolen. There was all kinds of different things going on. You had those wonderful people that would come out. We'd stop at a traffic light, and you'd have the bums. Am I right? The bums would come out and start cleaning the window, and then they want money from you. Your light changes green, and they're not getting out of the way. They're demanding money now because they come out and wiped off your windshield. They were having a lot of problems with things like that. So Giuliani comes into power, and he's hearing all these complaints of citizens of New York. And he sits down, he reads the broken window theory, and he starts to get some ideas of changing that. Simple things. Not big, drastic things, but simple things. Like he went to all his police chiefs and said, why do we have these guys going out and cleaning windows and then not letting traffic flow, demanding money? Well, the police chiefs said, well, we can't do anything about that. It's just one of those things. We have a lot of beggars, a lot of traffic. It's hard to catch them, blah, blah, blah. Giuliani didn't want to hear it. He said, fix it. He gave them a few weeks. They couldn't figure out how to fix it. So he started fixing it on his own. He went and talked to the district attorney and talked to some others and got the idea, hey, every one of these guys that walks out in traffic to clean off a window, I want them arrested. They said, well, you can't arrest them. That's not really a crime. He said, sure, it's jaywalking. Simple. That was the answer. So they started putting officers at corners, believe it or not, just to watch for these knuckleheads that would go out into traffic and try to clean off your windshield and then try to hold you up for money. They started arresting a bunch of them, giving them a simple citation, annoying them. It stopped. My own police chief tells a story. I happened to be there the day when he lost his temper over it, so I was able to see it. He happens to be a student of this broken window theory also. He read the book and really tried to change the police department in a lot of ways to work with it. A woman came into our station one time. She needed directions. She needed directions to one of our many, we have like 17 parks. She needed directions to one of our parks because there was an activity going on there, community event. Here it turns out she was the speaker. Here it turns out, unbeknownst to the supervisor, they went out and talked to her and gave her directions. He didn't realize that she was also a state senator. So he goes out to give this woman directions because our dispatcher was tied up. She tells him where she wants to go. He says, you really don't want to go there. That's a very dangerous place. She went there, and then she called our police chief to let him know that our police officers were telling people it was a dangerous place. Well, our chief understandably says, if it's so dangerous, supervisors, you better get some cops down there. because I don't want you turning people away, telling them a place is too dangerous to go in Carlisle. Broken window theory. The idea is don't sit around and wait for bad things to happen. In law enforcement, we realize we cannot prevent everything. There's absolutely no way. You cannot prevent everything. But you can prevent some things. You can reduce them. You can reduce opportunities for the criminals to do their criminal acts. Now, the way to get to this, the way to accomplish it, is through planning. And many of you have heard one of my favorite quotes, hope for the best, plan for the worst. That's one of my favorites. Now, what does that have to do with us? Well, I'm going to coin the phrase, and I'm not even going to put a study together. I'm not going to take 10 years of government money and everything else and assign committees. I'm going to throw out an idea tonight. I'm going to call it broken Christian theory. You see, I think most of the time we live reactive lives when it comes to sin. I think, and tonight we're just going to focus on our own sin because this whole idea that I have here is actually like a 12-week lesson and I need to get in 20 minutes, so less than that now. But just focusing on our own sins, are we reactive most of the time? Do we go through the day and try to tackle everything that the devil is going to throw at us? We can certainly do that. God gives us the strength to handle anything that Satan can come up with. We know that. James 4 tells us, submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. So we know we can resist him. We also know that God makes sure that we're not given anything more than we can handle. Now, whenever I hear that, I always think of the quote in Aladdin, for those of you that have seen the kids' movie Aladdin, where he says, I can't kill you, but it's amazing what you can live through. That verse about not giving us more than we can handle always makes me think of that. I just want to pose the question, is a reactive life really that effective? Is a Christian living a reactive life really that effective? Sure, we should be able to take care of ourselves simply with the strength of God. We should be able to handle anything that's given to us with the strength of God. But what strength does that leave us for avoiding or even preventing sin in our own lives? To use a law enforcement analogy again, back when the police were reactive, crimes were solved. Crimes would happen, crimes would be solved. There was measurable statistics. You know, police departments all over the world, they could say, yes, you know, we had this many robberies and we were able to solve this many. We had this many thefts and we were able to solve this many. You know, if my dog Eagle, everybody always wants to see, especially police departments that don't have canines, whenever they talk to me and they hear me my demos and things like that, they always want to know the statistics. They always want to know how many crimes Eagle has actually solved and how many times he's been able to catch the bad guy, how many dollars in drugs he's been able to find. It was a measurable thing whenever we were reacting to crime. Officers could feel good at the end of their day because they knew they were finding criminals. They knew that somebody had committed a criminal act. They were catching them. They were putting them away. They could go home feeling like they had helped somebody. They had job satisfaction. People even appreciated officers then because all those victims out there, when they called the police to report a crime, police would come and hopefully be able to solve it. And so there was a good relationship. People actually wanted the police because they saw the value of having them after they were victimized. After. That would be 1997, Carlisle, and most other places. But I'm familiar with Carlisle because that's when I started there in 1997, and that's what was happening. People were calling us after a crime occurred. We were reacting after a crime occurred. What message was being sent by that? I'll tell you what. It says, criminals, if you commit a crime, we're probably going to catch you. It may take a while, but by about the 10th time or so you commit it, we're going to catch you. Probably. So what message are we sending ourselves about sin? Are we saying, Satan, you might get me to sin, and I'm going to try to stop you the next time. It may take a while, but by your 3,000th time, I'll probably be able to stop you. Well, that can work. I know it can work because we do it often. But I propose that we can do better than that. There's a sign along 581 that some of you that are close to me have heard me complain about. And I know it's rare for me to complain about anything, but you've heard me complain about this sign. It says, any of you that travel along there, it says, "Beware of aggressive drivers." That sign drives me nuts. Beware of aggressive drivers. What message is that saying? That's saying, all of you, when you're driving along there with your families, be careful, because there's aggressive drivers out there. Why should I have to be careful? How about we make a new sign that says, "Aggressive drivers, beware." Let's send a message to aggressive drivers instead of the people that are driving along minding their own business and being good drivers. What if we take a more proactive approach to the sin in our lives? Just consider it. Sending a different type of message to ourselves, to Satan, to those around us. What if we look the person in the mirror and resolve to prevent some of our sins from even happening? Sometimes I think, I'm afraid, that we just resign ourselves to sin. We know that we have weaknesses. We know that we have an evil nature. We know that we are going to stumble. But do we give into that too often? Are we just throwing our hands up in the air? Are we like those New York City police chiefs that say, "It's just going to happen. Nothing we can do"? It takes an aggressive mindset, a mindset that sometimes we're not used to having. Those of you, ladies that have taken my self-defense class, one of the things I teach them is to not be a victim. Yes, when you're a victim, something happens to you, whether it be a victim of crime, a victim of sin, whatever. Yes, God has provided you with a wonderful family for support. He has given us the strength to get through the situations after they happen. He's given us the knowledge in His Word of how to deal with it. But how about if we not be a victim in the first place? How about if we not allow ourselves to commit those sins in the first place? And again, I'm not talking about everything. We can't. We are unable to do that. I'm sorry, Grant, I used the word. We are unable to stop it all. But does that mean we don't try at all? Now remember what I said we would need first. It's like those folks that were students of the broken window theory. You need a plan. Do we go through our days with a plan? See, most criminals are opportunists. Satan is an opportunist. They're looking for weaknesses. He's looking for weaknesses. Just like a criminal, Satan loves somebody without a plan. So why give him that satisfaction? What would it take to make a good plan against sin? Well, a little introspection, something that's not easy. You have to look that person in the mirror and figure out exactly what you struggle with the most, the things that you just keep doing over and over again, the things that have come between you and others, more importantly, you and God. And that'll be different for all of us. And that's a whole other conversation, all the different factors and ways that we could be affected by sin. But we need to do it and stop and think about it. And then we take a realistic look at our weaknesses and we decide that we're not going to just succumb to them, that we're going to reduce them. We're going to reduce the chances for not just our weaknesses, but we're going to reduce the chances for them to be exploited. We need to plan ahead where we will be, who we will be with, what we will do while we're there, what we will say. We take a realistic look at our strengths. And I'm not saying you doubt God, doubt His ability to give you strength. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying sometimes we don't recognize the help He's giving us. Sometimes we don't recognize the guidance from His Word or the strength from the family that He's given us, the reasoning ability that we can actually plan out, recognize the dangers of our own sins, recognize maybe those danger signals that are sent to us. Even the ability to learn from the mistakes of other Christians around us as we're trying to be strong for them. We have to make a firm plan of what we want to accomplish, and not just because it's part of a broken window theory or the broken Christian theory that I coined, but because it's the right thing. Would it make any sense for a ship to leave port without a course? Or a police officer to go out with any kind of enforcement goal? Or soldiers to go out without an objective? Or an athlete to go out without a finish line or a goal in mind? And finally, you take your plan and you be aggressive. You be aggressive about facing Satan with it. And you stand firm. And I'm not talking about with arrogance or pride. I'm talking about confidence. Confidence that we have in God. One of Sharon's favorite shows, without a doubt, would be The Dog Whisperer. She enjoys that show. And when I get to watch it with her, any of you that have ever watched that show, you know that most of the time he is training the owners, not the dogs. A lot of the times, he's teaching the owners to have a plan, to be confident. And whenever they do those things, whenever they can act with a plan and with confidence, they're successful in training their dog, making changes in the whatever craziness their dog is doing that they needed to call him. And I'm just suggesting that we do that in our lives. But don't take my word for it. I have a few verses here. Exodus 14, 13 and 14. Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid, stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only be still." Or Matthew 10, 21. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child. Children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. All men will hate you because of me, but he who stands firm in the end will be saved. In Matthew 24, 12, because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. I'm going to close up 12 weeks of lesson now. Fix the broken windows in your life, whether it be a sin that you struggle with, whether it be a relationship that keeps breaking and you keep struggling with, fix them. If it gets broken, fix it again. Don't stand by and let it go. Don't throw your hands up in the air and say, "What's going to happen anyway?" Send a message to Satan and those around you that you're not going to let him succeed. Stand firm against him with confidence. Don't let him rule your life. Don't let fear rule your life. Make a proactive plan and stand firm with the confidence that only God can give you.